Morning is from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, verses 21 through 43. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue named Jairus came, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." So he went with him. And a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus, and she came up behind him in the crowd, and she touched his cloak, for she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhages stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "Do you see the crowd pressing in on you? How can you ask, 'Who touched me?'" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." He allowed no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they had come to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. When he had entered, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. Then he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha, come," which means, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk about. She was 12 years of age. At this, they were overcome with amazement. He strictly ordered them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat. The word of the Lord for the people of God. Thanks be to God. That was a long story. I felt like I was watching a TV show there for a second. It's like, goodness, whew. It's a cool story. It's two healing stories. They're interwoven together. We could have taken them out, but it'd be like, I don't know, just having hamburgers without a barbecue. Like, you can do it. You can have a barbecue without hamburgers. You can eat hamburgers without going to a barbecue, but they're so much better when you do them together. So we read these stories together as one. At the beginning, we see that Jesus has crossed again in the boat. Right, so we talked last week, whenever Jesus is crossing the sea, he's going from one place, a Jewish place, over to the other side of the sea where it's not his people. Well, this time, in this story, we got to keep up. So we got to go back and find out how many times he's crossed the sea. So this is the second time he's crossed the sea. Okay, so he's back with the Jewish people. That's why there's a synagogue leader there. Okay, so he comes back. He's over on this side, and the synagogue leader comes forward and meets Jesus down by the boat. Now, what would the synagogue leader have been like? He's an important guy. He's powerful. He's likely got a lot of money. When he speaks, people listen. This is an important person in the community. It's almost, you know, he comes before Jesus. You can almost, as you start to read this, you're like, okay, what's going to happen? Jesus is obviously an important person, but here is this powerful leader of the community. This is a man, when he speaks, you do what he says. So there's a little bit of tension as he comes forward to Jesus and with all of the crowd, and he comes before him, and instead of demanding, he falls on his knees. He begins to beg him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be well and live." Now, Jesus' work would have been very popular. It would have been made well known to those that were around. This man knows, believes, that Jesus will be able to heal his daughter if only he will come and meet her to lay hands on her. And so why not use his power and his position to make sure that that happens? So he goes to the man. He goes to Jesus. Very powerful man. He uses that position to get what he wants. But he does it in a way that's not so demanding. He's still begging. He's still falling on his feet. This is a powerful man. Down in the dirt. The feet of another man. Begging him to come. He uses his power, but he gives some of it up too. He begs Jesus in a very public way. The crowd has formed. The people know who Jesus is. They're excited that he's back on their side. They've heard what he's done on the other side. We didn't read those stories, but it was a pretty incredible scene. Jesus making a big old fuss with a bunch of pigs and demons and everything. Word gets around. People are excited to see Jesus. So Jesus decides to go with the man. All right, we'll travel to your home. We'll make sure that we get there in time to save your daughter. And as they're walking, the crowd continues to grow larger and larger. And it's this big sort of celebrity scene with people pushing in. And I imagine there's some bumping and rubbing. And it feels awful. We've been in a pandemic for a year. We got lots of space now. I get nervous when I go back into Kroger and I have to walk past somebody. Sorry. Excuse me. It feels weird. We get used to being lonely and away from people and not having to put up with people breathing on us and breathing our air. And as nice as it is to be around people, there were some nice things about being isolated a little bit. Maybe I've gone crazy. I don't know. So Jesus is in this large crowd of people and they're pushing, and I imagine it's hard to walk. Almost picture this paparazzi scene. People all trying to get to Jesus. And there's a woman who's been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. Now we're meant to understand that this is sort of a problem with menstruation, right? And even as such, I don't want to make it weird. I'm a guy. The idea of having like one period just blows my mind. And she's been bleeding for 12 years. I cannot begin to understand what this woman has gone through. Would have been an incredibly difficult thing. Being on your cycle at that time was completely an ostracizing thing. You couldn't be a part of the community. You had to be outside of even your own home. And so for 12 years to suffer from this, and not only that, but to go to doctor after doctor after doctor seeking help, and doctors that only make it worse, apparently. She spent all of her money. This woman has nothing. She is the exact opposite of the synagogue leader. He's somebody important. Powerful, rich. When he speaks, you do it. Here's a woman you stay away from. You literally can't touch. She has no money. She has no power. She's hurting. And so she doesn't come before Jesus in this very public way, making these demands and begging, "Come heal my daughter. Lord, come heal me." She sneaks up behind him. But her faith is equally as strong as the man's. The synagogue leader knows if Jesus just touches his daughter, the daughter will be healed. This woman knows that if she even touches his clothes, she'll be healed. And so she works her way through the crowd. If you've ever tried to go the opposite way at a ball game or anything like that. You can understand how difficult that would have been. She sneaks up behind Jesus and she touches his cloak, and immediately her hemorrhaging stops. Immediately she can tell in her body that she is healed. Mark uses that word immediately all the time. It's a fast-paced gospel. Things happen, bam, bam, bam. Immediately. Immediately she is healed, and immediately Jesus knows that something has happened. He can feel that power has gone forth from his body, that something has happened. And he turns around, and I think this is a funny scene to me. Because Jesus, in the midst of all this crowd, people pushing in and bumping, and imagine some of the disciples were trying to play bodyguard and like bump people out of the way. But Jesus is getting rocked and bumped, and he stops everybody and says, "Who touched me?" And the disciples are just like, "What are you talking about, man? Like, read the room. There's people everywhere. Like, we've all been touched. We're all like, this is awful. How can you say, who touched me? Like, everybody has touched you." And the woman, knowing what has happened, she speaks up. She said, "It was me." And Jesus, the woman also, fear and trembling fell down before him. So unlike the synagogue leader who comes and makes this big public ask in front of everybody, "Jesus, follow me, come heal my daughter." This woman sneaks up, touches Jesus' cloak, and is healed in secret. But both of them fall on the ground before Jesus, begging and pleading. The woman afterwards, the synagogue leader before. And Jesus makes a big deal of it. "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." She comes to him in private, secretly. She's healed, and Jesus makes this big deal of it. Make sure that everybody knows what it is that has healed this woman. And they continue on to her house, to the synagogue leader's house, and you almost get the feeling, reading the story, the daughter has died. And you can almost read it like, "We've been delayed, Jesus. We had to stop to heal this one woman, and because we waited so long to take care of all that, the daughter has died." It doesn't say that specifically, but you get the feeling reading it that way. And everybody that comes forward is like, "This girl is dead. Do not bother the teacher any longer." Jesus looks to the girl's father and she says, "Fear not, just believe." Can you imagine somebody saying that to you? To the death of a loved one? You've just gotten the worst news of your life, and this man that you believe in says, "Don't worry, just believe." I can't imagine that. They continue on to the house and they see all of the commotion. This girl has just died. It's a sad thing, and they've hired these professional mourners to come. That's what you would have done. The louder your mourners, the more important you were, right? More people that are upset, the better you were in life. So the rich synagogue leader is able to provide the mourning for his daughter, and people are making all of this commotion, and Jesus comes up and he's like, "Why are you making all of this commotion? Why do you weep? She's not dead, but sleeping." And they laugh at Jesus. And unlike the woman who he heals very publicly, he makes a big deal about healing the woman. Stops the whole crowd. "Who touched me? Stand up. We're going to have this whole conversation in front of everybody." Jesus takes into the girl's room just her father and mother and those three disciples or so that were with him. He heals the little girl simply by touching her. Taking her by the hand, she's lifted up. But he does it in private. In the quietness of that room with no other witnesses, with no other people around. This is a very quiet healing. And he tells them not to tell anyone. And he gives the girl something to drink. Something to eat and to drink. So we tell these two stories together because they're interwoven that way. There's a lot of parallels, right? Jesus calls the woman when he sends her off after he heals her daughter. We have the healing of the synagogue man's daughter. They're both suffering. The number 12 is important. The woman's bleeding for 12 years. The little girl is 12 years of age. There's a lot of parallels that bring these two stories together. But then there's also a lot of differences. The position of place and power and money that the two characters have are so importantly different. You expect the synagogue leader to be healed, for his family to be healed. You don't necessarily expect Jesus to stop what he's doing to save the woman who's been hemorrhaging for 12 years. You don't expect someone who sneaks up behind Jesus and simply grabs his cloak to be healed the same way as someone who invites Jesus to their home to take the hand of their daughter. There's these differences. And so as we continue to look at this story, and we look at those differences, I want to try to pull some things out. We try to say that everybody's important. We try to say that everybody matters. We say that out loud. But it's hard not to look at the people around us and cast judgments. It's hard not to see groups of people and think, okay, maybe they brought that on themselves. It's hard. It's human nature. We're taught that if we work hard, we follow the rules, that good things will happen to us. Stay in school. Get a good job. Don't do drugs. Good things will happen. And so then when we see other people who aren't doing those things, we see somebody that dropped out of school, we see an addict, we see somebody that can't hold down a job, it's not too hard to cast them aside. Well, if you simply worked as hard as I did, if you simply did what you were supposed to do, you might not be in this trouble. That's human nature to feel that way. It's how our culture is set up. We want to lift up people that work hard. But sometimes things just happen. We don't know why this woman is suffering from what she's suffering from. But it would have been easy to look at her and to pass judgment on her. Well, if you would just do this, if you would just figure that out, if you would save some money better, if you had gone to the right doctor, just go to this one last one. That woman still gets healed. She's still suffering and hurting as much as anyone else. Those people that we are so easy to cast judgment on, God looks upon with as much favor as anyone else. It's hard. I'll admit, it's hard not to make a snap judgment about somebody. But if we can try to dig deeper, try to find ways to help and to uplift, to make it possible for people to receive healing. Both of these healings deal with Jesus giving back life. The woman who's been bleeding for 12 years, her life is given back to her. She will be able to re-enter society. She can be with her family. She can do the things that she hasn't been able to do for 12 years because Jesus has healed her. The little girl is literally given her life back. She was dead. Now she's alive again. Her life has been given back to her. And it's important to get some cultural context here. She's almost of marrying age for the culture. She's 12, and another year or two she'll be able to get married and to have children. So she'll be able to continue life, continue to bring life for the culture and for the society. Jesus has given back her life, and he's given back her ability to continue to bring life. How do we, as Christ's hands and feet, give back life to those around us? What are the ways that we interact with people and support one another in life-giving manners life-giving ways. I love the fact that we grow food, that we package food together in order to give to people. We literally feed people. We literally give life to those around us. I think that's an incredible thing. What are some other ways that we give life? It's a fascinating story. It's an incredible story. We don't give the gospel writers enough credit for their literary writing skills, I think. Two beautiful stories interwoven together. I love it. But let us continue as we go forth from this day to continue to seek ways to heal, to seek ways to see people as God sees them, to see this woman who's been hurting for so long as another child of God, to recognize the powerful people with money and prestige as hurting people too. As easy as it is to look down on the hemorrhaging woman, it's easy to look up at the synagogue man and not recognize the pain that he's suffering from. Like somehow having money and power prevents you from experiencing those things that the rest of us have. Let us look at people through the eyes of Christ. Let us find ways to offer life and to bring forth life and healing into those that are around us. Amen.